It's my pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, James B. from San Diego. Come on up, buddy. Let's do this. Amen. Usually we stop at 9 o'clock, but you do your thing.
9 o'clock. That's we're gonna stop at 9 o'clock too. All right. How's everybody doing? My name is James Brown, and I'm definitely an alcoholic. I'd like to thank my higher power God for another day of sobriety. Whew. Welcome to newcomer to new way of life, and let you know you don't have to take no drinks, sneak no drugs, harm yourself, anybody else, even if your mind tell you that you want to. And Scotty, congratulations on your 2 years, brother. The language of the heart. The language of the heart, I felt that. I really did. And Dana, congratulations on your 3 years. And Marshall, wow, I've known you every day since I've been sober. Congratulations on your 35 years. And you know, the program Alcoholics Anonymous is a wonderful program. And it's a gift to me that I've been blessed with. But it wasn't free. Like, you know, becoming free, free indeed, was not, it was not inexpensive either. It cost. And I didn't know what it was gonna cost. And I had no idea what being sober, like really being sober, really meant. I was not the type of person that thought about doing things for other people all the time before I thought about doing things for myself. But I can tell you through Alcoholics Anonymous, my life has changed. Through these 12 steps, my life has changed. Through those traditions, I have learned how to be in meetings and how to help and deal with other people, even when I didn't want to. Even when I didn't want to. The Big Book gave me a blueprint for living my life. And it is the most constant thing in my life today. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. And I grew up in a big, big family. And I was raised by a village in this family. And my big mom stayed in one house on the corner. Her sister, who was my grandmother, stayed in the two houses down. My aunt stayed in a two-family flat and a couple more houses down. Uncle John and Aunt Nancy stayed across the street. My uncle stayed in a four-family flat. I had cousins that stayed on the other end of the block. And growing up in the early, late 70s in Michigan, it was like the street in the neighborhood helped raise us. You know, we rode bikes. We built go-karts. We went to the Boys and Girls Club. I grew up with a lot of cousins, so we had sleepovers. I mean, my life is like, I had a good life, but I experienced a whole lot of trauma, too. And the trauma was through the dysfunction of my parents, because my parents were children having children, you know what I mean? And their lifestyle was not conducive to good order and discipline. You know, they lived lives. I mean, they lived a full life and they did not hold back on living, okay? So in the best interest of me and my brother, it was thought that we would live with Big Ma because she was constant. Elementary school was a walk up the street. You know, the family could help raise us and they could grow into the adults that they needed to be and help raise us at the same time. Now this house, you know, it was full of love too. Moral, you know, Big Mom and Big Dad, they were the elders of our family. And I grew up with about six uncles. I had a couple aunts, and this is all on my dad's side of the family. And then on my mother's side of the family, my grandmother, all my cousins, my aunts and uncles. So like I said, I grew up in a very, very big and loving family. I was told that I was loved. I was told that I need to go to school and get an education. I was told that doing the right thing for the right reason was the best thing to do. I was told to be honest, don't cheat, don't lie, don't steal. all the things that y'all tell me in these rooms today, right? I was told this when I was a little kid. I don't know how my moral compass became obscured. But what I can tell you is that alcohol had something to do with it. Because at 8 years old, I had the pleasure of having a drink. And what it made me feel, and how it made me feel, I can almost remember that moment. See, because I was low in self-esteem, low in self-confidence, always wanted to be a little taller, you know, a little bit lighter. I wanted longer hair, you know. I wanted everything and to be everybody except for me. And I didn't know what that was about. I really didn't. So as I grew older, those frequent moments of having alcohol and sharing it with my friends and my cousins, they started to happen a little bit more often. 12, 13, 14, I was really drinking. It wasn't like we sneaking a beer. It was like we got a six pack. Okay, so what I want you to understand is that at a very early age, I was drinking. I was not sipping. See, I never knew how to sip a drink. I never drank for the sheer pleasure of the drink. I always drank because I liked the way it made me feel. I drink for the effect. Okay? I need you to really understand that. And along the way, I experienced a whole lot of party favors too, you know. But this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I'm going to talk about alcohol because I'm a real alcoholic too. So as I grew older, right, I was a straight-A student in school. I never had to be told to do homework. I never had to be reminded to do my chores because I learned at an early age, if I did the things I was supposed to do, that the focus would not be on me. It would be on my cousins. It would be on my brother. It would be on my uncles. It would be on everybody except for me. So I brought my report card home, straight A's and a B. And what I'm trying to explain to you is that my life was good, right? Nobody was torturing me. No one was beating me, except for when I did something wrong. I did get some butt whippings, because I was a little sneaky, too. I was sneaky, okay? I was sneaky, and I was conniving, and I was manipulative, too, right? But for the most part, I was brought up in a good, wholesome, respectable, loving house. But my choices at a very early age took me off a path that I believe God wanted me to live for a very long time. So, you know, I got to middle school, and in middle school, you know, I started putting a shot of my grandfather's CC in my tea in the morning before I would go to school. And I would go to school, and I would sit in the back of the class, and I would be in a zone because, see, I liked school. And I was like, my mind, I could let my mind escape. Like, in the work that I did, I would, like, picture myself in the work. And I had a photographic memory, so my study habits were, like, phenomenal. I mean, I didn't get a C on my report card till I was in the eighth grade. That's how much I believed in education. That's how consistent and dedicated I was to me and my school. But see, as my family seen me over here, they did not see me. See, I always changed how I was depending on who I was around. See, I grew up in a neighborhood where it was a lot of guys doing a lot of different things on corners, in alleys, in houses, and they was making a lot of money. And I was attracted to their lifestyles, see? Their nice jewelry, their nice clothes. See, even though I grew up in that wonderful house, we weren't poor, but I didn't get a lot of things that my friends wanted, right? And a lot of my clothes and things came from hand-me-downs or from the Goodwill. You know, so I was attracted to those guys when they come around with them brand new white Nikes on, gold chains, and nice Adidas track suits. I'm like, man, I want some of that stuff. But I had a subtle fear of my grandparents, right? I had a subtle fear because, see, my grandparents didn't play. And if they said, I don't want you hanging out with this person or that person, they meant no hanging out with this person or that person. So what I did was, like I said, I did what I was supposed to do. I took the light off me, and I went over here, and I did the things I wasn't supposed to do. And as I did those things, I started to create this facade of this person who I thought I wanted to be. And it started to change my mannerisms. It started to change how I treated people. And all along, there was never a moment that alcohol was not involved. See, I was 15 years old the first time I ever threw up from drinking. And I was said, I will never do that again. And the next weekend, when my cousins came over, I was doing it again. See, even though I didn't like the negativity about it, I couldn't escape the joyful, good, warm feeling that it gave me. Like, I could dance when I went to the basement parties. I wasn't scared to talk to the ladies, the girls rather, you know. The alcohol was like, at a very early age, became my best friend. And then when I went to high school, I just lost my mind. I was drinking before school every day. See, I grew up in a family where drinking was sociably accepted, right? Every holiday, it was a table full of alcohol upstairs, and in the basement in the refrigerator was a refrigerator full of beer. It wasn't nothing to say, hey, go get me a beer, and you go get them a beer, and you put one in your jacket pocket and go outside and drink it behind the garage, you know? It wasn't nothing to say, hey, go make me one of those Hennessy's with Coke and put this much in it, and you put that much in it, take a swig out of it, then put the ice and put the Coke in it and take it to them. So alcohol was, you know, it was always around, and I enjoyed it immensely. In high school, my grades really started to slip because I wasn't going as much as I should have go. You know, first class, nope, ain't going to that one because we drinking and we smoking, okay? And second period, I can go to business, I can go to English, you know, I can go to this class. But, you know, at some point, you know, my desire to hang out with my friends in the bathroom and drink and smoke became more prevalent than me going to school. See, at this point, alcohol is starting to take control of my life, right? And I didn't understand that. I thought it was all good times. And you really need to know, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say, oh, every moment I drank and everything that I did when I was drinking was bad. No, I had some really good times drinking. That is not my story, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you all a big old lie that my life was miserable every time I drank, because it was not. But what did happen? What did happen is that my life started to get really messed up because of that drinking that I enjoyed so much. So the 9th and the 10th grade, then 11th and 12th grade, by this time I was living in this facade of this person that I thought I was. I was one of those guys that was hanging out in these houses and doing these certain things that shouldn't, you know, that I wouldn't encourage my son in high school to be doing. I became a high school father. People that knew me said that I wasn't such a nice guy in certain situations. And I never started out to be this person of negative character, because I was brought up with love. I was brought up with respect. I was brought up with do the right thing for the right reason. But I always thought that as long as I was not really harming anyone, that I wasn't doing nothing wrong. The young lady that became my son's mother, me and her were real good friends in high school. And we had a baby. And I'm in a 12th grade, right, with a son, walking a high school hallway with a one-year-old baby, carrying him to school sometimes. She dropped out of school so I could continue to go to school, right? And then I had a part-time job at an elementary school, Custer Elementary School. And I was an office assistant because I taught myself how to type when I was in middle school. I learned about the filing systems and, you know, all this administrative stuff. I learned all this stuff because I was always told that if you know something, no one can ever take it away from you. And if you know things, you can do things and you can do more. And going to school and having these certain skills were helpful in what I like, what I chose to do. And that was like helping the kids in the elementary school. But it was time that I would be so drunk when I showed up to that school, right, that I would go and hide in the closet. Or I would go hide in an empty classroom so that I could try to come down so that I can be effective. I remember being there so drunk and looking at this paper for like 30 minutes and not knowing, like froze looking at this paper. And I know the people was like, what is wrong with him? You know, like alcohol at this point had really started to take over my life. So, the opportunity came for me to join the Navy. And the way that opportunity came is because I had a nightmare. I watched in my dream this guy walk up to me and pull out a gun and, like in the movies, blow my brains out, and I watched myself die in this dream. 35 days later, I was in the Navy. Because even though I thought I was this pseudo-tough guy and all this stuff, I took that as like God was showing me what was going to happen to me if I kept living the way I was living. So I joined the Navy, and I said, it's a chance for a new start. You know, I can go to the Navy, right? I can be able to take care of my young family, right? I can have housing, you know. They'll help me. They'll send me to school. They'll make a way for me to go to college. I was so excited about this new career. But what I didn't know is that wherever I went, I went. Okay? I don't know if some of y'all understand that wherever you go, you take you with you. But I took me with me, right? So that boot camp, I went to boot camp in Great Lakes, Illinois, and shortly after that, when we graduated, the night I got to Virginia, I was drunk again. And I woke up and I'm like, how did this happen again? Like, you know, like, man. So I gets to a school, and that's the school where I go to learn this trade that they're gonna send me to the Navy to do. So all while I'm in this school, right, I'm calling my dad on the weekend, and I'm having these unpleasant conversations with him, telling him about how horrible of a dad he was because he wasn't there for me like I thought he should have been there for me, and how I didn't appreciate the fights that him and my mother would have when I would watch him beat my mom. And they wasn't in the nice, politest words that I would talk to him in. And I remember calling him one day and him telling me, you know, James, he said, God has forgiven me and your mom has forgiven me. And one day I hope that you can forgive me. And until we can talk about this in a better manner, I will not be accepting any more of these phone calls from you. And he, I don't know. And like in my hysteria, in my anger, in my rage, he remained this calm, collective, and peaceful man, right? And I'm like thinking to myself, I know that's not who you are. But you know, God had started working on him because he had started going to church, and you know, his life was changing. He was no longer doing the stuff that he showed me how to do. He was no longer living a life that I don't even have time for that. But just put it like this, it was not healthy. That's the best way I could say it. So I go through this process, you know, and I'm in A school and I'm doing real good. And, you know, I graduate number 3 in the class and they send me to the fleet and I'm meritoriously promoted to a 3rd class and I'm doing good. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, that alcohol, man. I remember some guys took me out and got me drunk. And I came back and I urinated in the birthing next to this guy's rack. And then I'm wondering why he want to beat me up in the morning. Because, see, now I'm blacking out, right? See, now I'm at the point to where alcohol ain't so enjoyable. At this point, I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew I had crossed that invisible line. I knew I shouldn't be drinking, but I didn't know how to stop. So after some getting in trouble, after getting my first DUI, the Navy say, we sending you to treatment. You're a good worker, right? You're a good person, but you need some help. So they sent me up to Miramar to treatment for the first time. 28-day treatment, you know, and I'm like, I'll play the game. I'll play the game. I'll do and say what they want me to do and say, right? But see, it was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. See, they planted the seed, right? And I went through these classes, and they was like, they breaking you down to build you up and all this stuff. And in this process, right, they started bringing us to meetings. They brought me to a meeting here. They took us to meetings at the Southeast Alano Club. They took us to meetings at the Mira Mesa Alano Club. They took us to meetings all over San Diego. And in this process, these people came to believe that James Brown would be the one guy in this program to succeed, right? And I bought into the lie, but see, what I didn't buy into, I didn't buy into the steps. See, I didn't buy into the steps, right? So what I bought into was like, if I don't drink, I won't get in trouble. But see, at this point, I ain't built no foundation. I don't got no fellowship around me. I don't have no support group. You know, I looked at the steps from the front row seat, and I said, oh, man, okay, I believe in God. Yeah, I know I had some problems with alcohol. You know, inventory, yeah, I'm good, you know. Yeah, all right, God, okay. And then, you know, made a list of people. I ain't did nothing to nobody, you know, and straight on. And so I did the steps sitting in the front seat by myself, right? And so not a cloud on the horizon. And in this process, right, my second daughter was born and my third daughter was born, right? But in this process, my life got better from not drinking. But the book tell me not drinking is enough. It tells me that I must do some work around here. But I didn't know that, right, because I wasn't participating in the program. So 3.5 years later, I then got promoted at the job. I became an air controller. I'm doing exceptionally well. The family is halfway liking me, right? The wife is like appreciating me sometimes. My behaviors are manageable. I'm not saying they stellar. My behaviors were manageable, all right? I was coming home 75% of the time, not 25% of the time, okay? But 3.5 years, I hadn't took a drink. Not a cloud on the horizon. Life is good, right? And my friend, my best friend, came back from Okinawa, Japan. Now, y'all always told me in this room that if I drink, that it was going to be like I never stopped. And I never believed that. So I'm sitting in the back seat of this Jeep, and I got this 40-ounce in my lap. And I twist the top off, and I can still hear the sound today. And my mind is like, you could just have a sip, right? The obsession of the mind, right? Allergy of the body, though. Obsession of the mind will tell me after a period of time, 1 month, 1 year, 3.5 years, that next time is going to be different. But the allergy of the body. I took that drink, and the disease said, you know you done fucked up now. And after we sat there and talked and laughed, right, they went home. I went inside and changed my clothes and went and found places to drink and things to do until I blacked out. They came banging on my door to wake me up, to take me to the airport to pick up my wife and children. And when I got there, you know that smell. Oh, yeah. That you've been drinking all night long. Yeah. You can be right here and the person at the door can smell you. Yeah. So they came down the little escalator at the San Diego airport, you know, and she's looking at me and I'm looking at her. And she's standing about where Jonathan is sitting. And she said, "Who is that?" And she looked at me. And the look of despair and disgust and the pain that she thought that she was going to have to go through dealing with me drinking again. And I gave her every bit of that damn despair, disgust, and pain that she thought she was going to get. Because, see, once I drink, I have no conscience. Once I drink, I'm selfish. I'm inconsiderate. I think of me and what's going to satisfy me only. So as that goes, right, I start drinking. The guys and the officers and the leadership on the ship, they looking at me sideways. But I can play it off, right? Because, see, I'm a good one. I know how to manipulate. I know how to navigate, right? I get these qualifications, certifications. I do all this extra stuff, right? So when I do mess up, like go on a three-day drinking binge in Panama, and I wind up in an alcoholic coma in a hospital in Panama, and they ask me what happened, and I don't know what happened for the last day because I've been operating in a blackout. See, that's the kind of alcoholic that I am. So they send me back to Miramar. They had a program called a retread program. He's a great guy. He's a 4-0 sailor. You know, he trains our young sailors, blah, 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 all this stuff, right? But that's how I build it up so that when I tear down a house of cards, it's a little something there that's positive, right? So I go through treatment again, and you need to understand, like, I don't drink again, right? But I still ain't coming to meetings on a regular basis, Marshall. I'm showing up here, there, you know, stand in the back, don't shake no hands, don't say hi to nobody, don't tell nobody that I need help, because I think that that's showing weakness. And because of that, 4.5 years go by. Not one drop of alcohol. Not a cloud on the horizon. Man, life has gotten really good now. You need to really understand it. My Navy career has soared. My children are doing good. You know, my son's in these basketball tournaments and camps. Daughter in performing our school. Other daughter is a drum major. You know, life is pretty good, right? I done been promoted a couple times in the military. Like, I got notification I was going to become an officer, right? Like, life had got real good and not a cloud on the horizon. And I'm in Melbourne, Australia. And this guy comes up to me and said, "Hey, James, would you like to taste some wine? I just came from the winery and they gave me all these samples." And I don't know where sure came from. I don't even like wine, okay? You need to understand this. I am a beer and liquor drinker. I don't like wine. But see, that was the disease. Today I know that was the disease setting me up so I can really get the courage to go get what I want. And you know, I'm going to roll this thing along because through this process, right, through this process and me starting to drink again, here come DUI number 2, right? They send me overseas. I get promoted to an officer. I'm managing it somehow. You know, God, I know the day. I tried to get his career away so many times, y'all, by doing so many things I shouldn't do. But God, my higher power was with me all this time, right? I get emotional because when Scott was talking about how his life has changed through this process and the life that he gets to live today, I was sitting here and I was thinking about May the 8th, 2005, right? After I had got DUI number 3, after I had got DUI number 4, after the judge said, "Lieutenant Brown," see, now I'm a lieutenant, right? "Lieutenant Brown, you have lost the power of choice." And then he said, "And you know better." See, I don't want to go into all the places I drank, because y'all drank in the same places I drank. Corners, bars, closets, locked bedrooms. Y'all drank the same damn places I drank. And y'all, I don't need to talk about what I drank, because y'all drank the same thing I drank too. Damn poison. Okay? But what I need you to understand in this time that I've had to share is that alcohol is an insidious disease. And I did not understand that it was a disease until my sponsor, right? Because, see, after that DUI number 4, Marshall, and the judge sent me to George Bailey for 6 months, and I got 18 and a half years in the Navy, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to work, you know, this, you know, because sooner or later, somebody's going to be looking for me. Somebody's going to want to know where Lieutenant Brown is at, right? You know, I got 30 days of leave from one place to another, right? But sooner or later, somebody's going to start to wonder, well, you know, Lieutenant Brown ain't checked in yet. Where the hell is he at, right? I'm in this courtroom, and this guy, man, he stands up, and he says, Your Honor, I think Lieutenant Brown will make a great candidate for our work furlough program. I'm like, work furlough? I don't even know what that is, but yeah. Anything to keep me from going to George Bailey for 6 months, right? So in their infinite wisdom, they gave an alcoholic like me 6 weeks to show up to work furlough. And the judge said, Lieutenant Brown, there will be no drinking and driving, no drinking and or driving, nothing to do with drinking or driving. And I'm like, yes, sir. you know how you like, God, thank you for that one. You know, so what happens, right? You know, like, I'm the real alcoholic, you know. I'm drinking, you know, okay, alcohol stays in the system 2 or 3 days, right? So shit, you know, 2 weeks, a month. I'll stop at the 2 week point. 2 o'clock in the morning, I switch from hard stuff to soft stuff. See, because I know what an alcoholic is now because of this. See, I am unable to take a drink and abruptly stopped. I am incapable of drinking like a gentleman. That is not me. I can't do it. So I shows up, and guess what they do? I was drunk, and they took me to George Bailey, right? 6 months. Took my uniform and gave me some SD County Blues, them orange flip socks, somebody's recycled drawers, t-shirts, and socks. And I was in there. And in my process of being there, because I'd never been there, I almost caused a race riot for something that I did. So this guy say, hey, man, you come and hang out with me. He said, well, what are you here for? I say, because I drink too much. He said, you can't drink beer? I said, apparently not. So, you know, what happens is, like, this guy, he starts being my jail sponsor, right? He goes to the yard, you know, we work out together. He's telling me these papers to fill out to try to get in front of this judge. So I fill this paper out. And I'm like, shit, okay, well, I just might as well switch back to the guy that was in the streets in Detroit, because I got 6 months in here, so I'm just going to disassociate myself with family. I'm going to disassociate with anything good in me. I'm just going to turn into this person that served me well when I was in Detroit. 10 days later, I'm up in there, right, and they said, James Brown, roll up. And I'm like, what does that mean? And they said, you're getting out, man. And so I go to video court, and the judge, the same judge that sent me there, he say, what are you doing here? And this jail sponsor, right, he said, when you get there, you better tell him you need some help. And I said, Your Honor, I need help. He gave me an hour and a half to get to work furlough, and I'm going to tell y'all, I made it there. But on the way, the bright idea. You can get a 12-ounce can of Old English instead of a 16-ounce can. But see, y'all had taught me about the Serenity Prayer when I was visiting these rooms, right? And I started to say the Serenity Prayer. And before I knew it, I was getting off the bus in front of work furlough. And I walked in there, and I blew in that machine, and those zeros came up across that machine, and I was so, so happy. And that was my cascade of sliding down a razor blade pole into an alcohol hell because on May 8th, 2005, I drank myself into another alcoholic coma. And when I came to, it was all white. And the best thing I could come up with is I made it to heaven. And then I heard beep, beep, and then I heard, you know, the machine is like you go visit somebody and they got that machine that's pushing air in them to keep them alive because they incapable of living on their own breath. I had all these IVs in me, all these tubes in me. And I remember coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and hearing a guy share that he came to in a similar way. And I said, God, if you give me one more shot at this recovery thing, I promise you I will do something for my recovery every day. And you need to understand, I have not found it necessary to take a drink or sneak no drugs since that day. And on Monday, when they let me out of that hospital, I came to a meeting right here at South Bay Pioneer. It was the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I came to because, see, they had showed me where the meetings was. And periodically, I would come over and I would sit in the back over there. And then I started going to the Southeast Solano Club. And then I started going to some meetings downtown. And then I got comfortable because I seen these two guys that I said, a sponsor, it's that sponsor guy. You said I need one of these to make it. See, now I have been given a gift of desperation. I was willing to do whatever y'all said to live. Yeah. So I got a sponsor, and me and my sponsor, we took them steps, and my sponsor don't play. He is still my sponsor to this day. I have been overseas a couple times. I have done some extraordinary things, and this man has been in my life every step of the way. He told me that I needed to build a foundation and I needed a support group. And I was quick on getting me a support group and building my foundation. Y'all told me that I needed to come around here and I needed to do something. I had to clean house, trust God, and help others, right? He said I needed to be a service and I needed a service commitment. And my sponsor told me that I needed to go to the step study meeting that he used to run every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. And I was there with him and Mr. Murphy. Mario, who gave Marshall that cake, me and him became very good friends very early in my recovery. And then I had another brother named Greg Nixon. Greg used to say, don't hang around him, don't hang around him, don't hang around him, because if you want to live, them motherfuckers, and that's what he said, them MFers are going to get you drunk. You need to hang around some people that's going to be about doing this work. You need to hang around people that's going to be going to meetings. They're going to be thinking about helping others. They're going to be willing to go on a 12-step call if somebody called them at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I didn't know what to do, y'all. You know, I just didn't want to drink. See, y'all said, keep coming back. Don't drink in between. And that was so hard for me because I lived a life that I depended on alcohol. 60 days, I was still detoxing off of alcohol. I still smelt it coming out my body. When I got here, I was spitting up chunks of my esophagus and blood because I had bleeding ulcers. You know, I wasn't far from that person that sat on the curb that smelled like urine and defecation. See, that's what I couldn't identify with when I first got here. But I became very intimately familiar to what it felt like to peel my socks off my feet and pull them out of my underwear. Okay? That's where alcohol took me. But where sobriety has taken me today, ooh-wee, I have been blessed to live two lives in one lifetime. Right? That woman that I disrespected so much, we co-parent our grown children and our grandchildren, right? We not together, but we have a civility with one another that we get to be in harmony when we around them, right? Yeah. The son that did not care too much for me, he comes and spends weeks with me. And we talk about intimate things. The daughter, oh my God, I've been blessed with a life unimaginable. And the thing that recovery has taught me that I don't have to react to things today. I have learned how to respond to things today. You know, he mentioned something like, you know, like those survivors of a shipwreck, the camaraderie that go from captain table to steerage, right, that dissipates as they go their separate ways. But that is the very cement that binds each and every one of us in this room. See, y'all said, the literature said, we are people that normally would not mix. I mean, when I was drinking, I drank with everybody. But I'm going to tell you, if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I can't say that I would be willing to drive 2 hours to come here and share my experience, strength, and hope. I can't say that I will be willing when a guy called me and say, will you sponsor me? And I say, let's pray about it. Let's set a date so we can meet up. Do you have a big book, a 12 by 12, a thesaurus, a notebook, a pen, and a highlighter? See, we got to have some tools. And we gonna take them steps, see, because the steps changed my life. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Marcel said it. We have to live the spiritual principles. We have to live these steps. I live the steps. You know, I've had some, like Dana said, some high highs, and I had some challenging lows. But one thing I have not found it necessary to do is that the up a drink. See, that big mom that I told y'all about 10 years ago, she died on my birthday. The disease said, we know you ain't gonna drink, but how about we snort some blow? like, I went to a meeting and shared about it immediately, right? Because see, and my magnifying mind, I might, you know, under the right desire meets opportunity, who knows what might happen. My brother got murdered some years ago. Marshall, I didn't know what to do. Marshall gave me step-by-step instruction what to do. She said, don't go too early and don't stay too long afterwards. Call me every other day or so, so you can have somebody in recovery to talk to. And I did that. She prayed for me before I left here. I didn't know I was going to be entitled to the luxuries of this program that have so freely been given to me by me doing the work. See, I am free from the bondage of self, and God has set me free. See, I have a higher power, and I don't like to say a higher power I could do business with, right? I have a God. The big books say a God. And I have a God. I have turned my will and my life over to his care, and I care not to run my own life today. I care not. That big dad, he passed away. It was one of them non-drinking periods. I didn't show up to his funeral drunk. And that other grandmother, the best friend of Big Mama, her sister, passed away last Saturday. I used to go home and cook with my grandmother for the holidays. And she would say, if Jimmy not coming, we not having dinner, because he comes and he cooks with me. See, I had these special moments that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. My mom not sending out no Red Cross messages talking about, where's my son? My dad ain't worried about me and acting like a tough guy and not asking. Going to ask my uncles how they seen me, how they talk to me. That relationship that I thought was never going to heal between me and him has been healed. Yeah. See, y'all told me if I just don't drink and I do the work, that my life would change, man. Y'all need to understand, my life has changed. I'm going through some stuff right now. I'm going through some sugar, honey, iced tea right now. But what I refuse to do is allow the disease to convince me that next time it's going to be different. Because my personal experience has shown me that I will end up jail, institution, or death. And it might not be the physical death, y'all. It may be that death that I walk around in the pain and misery of a drunken state every day trying to get one so I could get another one. Yeah. I have an uncle that's in this fellowship. And he told me, he said, if you drink, something bad is going to happen to your ass. And y'all need to understand this. If anybody in here decide to leave here and go get a drink, something bad is going to happen to your ass. Now, it might not be tonight. It might not be tomorrow. It may not be next week. But I know, and you know too, from your personal experiences, that alcohol will tear in your... You know, I'm a wrap it up. I have been given this this romance, right? Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Like, Alcoholics Anonymous has become this elusive desire of living fabulous to me. Right? Because I'm doing the right thing for the right reason, I'm no longer the person I used to be. I've been introduced to a beautiful woman that shows me inconsiderable, unconditional love that I never knew that was, I never knew I could enjoy it, right? See, I always had the thought that there was conditions. Conditions. It's always a damn condition on the goodness that God has for me. But it's not true. Right? God is love. And love is Alcoholics Anonymous. And as long as we continue to spread and share the love of this fellowship with one another, we will all get what we desire. That is the daily reprieve contingent upon your spiritual, the maintenance of our spiritual condition. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is like a love story. You know, like, I don't just read it, I study the big book, right? And when I read the big book, I find myself drifting into the pages of the big book, identifying myself along the letters and the words and the lines and the paragraphs as my life become fruitful and loving and joyful. Yeah. You know, this program is magnificent. And I want to thank y'all for coming out and listening to me share a little bit of me and who I am and what I am. Today, I know that I am an alcoholic. I am happy to know that I am an alcoholic. Because for so long, I did not know who or what I was. And today, I am grateful to know that my name is James Brown, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you.
James, thank you very much. I enjoyed that thoroughly, bro. That was awesome. That was awesome, James. Thanks. Please come.